So just imagine for a second, right? The sheer, I mean, the grueling physical toll of just staring at a blank canvas.
Oh, absolutely.
You're mixing acrylic pigments for weeks, and you're struggling obsessively to perfectly recreate the exact shadow in the eyes of a sister that you have lost forever.
Yeah, the emotional exhaustion of that process is just,
It's immense. Think about it. This isn't just someone creating art to, hang on a wall to match the sofa. This is a physical, defiant refusal to let someone disappear.
Right. It's a totally different thing.
And welcome to this custom deep dive designed specifically for you, because today's mission is entirely about decoding that kind of, well, profound visual archive of human presence.
And we are looking at a very specific, incredibly dense piece of source material to explore this today. Our focus is squarely on pages 401 to 403 of Jairo Duque's book, Trustio Pintura Artistica.
Yeah.
Specifically, we are diving into chapter 8, which is titled Retratos or Portraits. And, well, that title might imply just a simple catalog of faces.
Like in your book or something.
Exactly, like a directory. But this final stretch of the book actually synthesizes the entire philosophical spirit of his massive project. Painting here isn't just physical, it's an act of deep recognition. It's a methodical mechanism to capture and hold on to human existence.
Okay, let's unpack this, because Duque is completely upending the traditional expectation of what a portrait is actually supposed to do.
He really is.
To really grasp the gravity of this specific visual archive, we have to start at its most intimate, raw, emotional core, right? We have to examine blood ties and honestly, the agonizing process of grief.
Yeah, that's where it all anchors.
So on page 402, the text introduces portraits dedicated to Duke's mother and his sister. Both of these women are deceased.
Right.
And the book makes it incredibly clear that these are not meant to be pleasant, nostalgic decorations to just, make the viewer smile about the good old days.
Not at all.
The text defines them as rigorous exercises in evocation. And it uses this incredibly heavy phrase, which is creating a symbolic continuity.
And that phrase, symbolic continuity, I mean, that fundamentally changes the definition of the artwork right there.
It really does.
It implies that the relationship with these women hasn't actually ended. It has simply been forced to change mediums.
Wow. Change mediums?
Yeah, the connection transitions from physical interaction in the real world to a continuous, sustained interaction through the canvas itself.
There's one specific piece described in the text that, I mean, it completely stopped me in my tracks.
The choral piece.
Yes. It's an acrylic on canvas painting where Duke unites the deceased, so his parents and his sister, with the living, meaning himself and his surviving siblings, Christina and Carlos.
He puts them all in the exact same frame.
Exactly. You are physically painting the people who are breathing right next to the people who are gone, using the exact same physical medium to represent both.
And the text describes the specific piece as acquiring a choral character, which is such a great word.
Yeah, why choral?
Well, a choir doesn't rely on every single voice being in the exact same physical location to harmonize, right?
Oh, that's true.
By consolidating the family as the absolute narrative core of Trastio, the artist builds a space where those voices, regardless of whether they are still speaking in the physical world, they're brought together in harmony.
I kept trying to visualize the psychology behind painting that piece. It almost feels like building an anchor. You are actively saying, you are still here because I am physically forcing you to be here on this canvas.
Right. The act of painting is an anchor.
But I was thinking about it like a magical room, like this magical room on the canvas where the laws of time and biology are just completely suspended. It's a place where the living and the dead can literally sit at the same table and breathe the same air.
That's a beautiful analogy.
But I can easily see someone looking at this from the outside and making a completely different assumption.
How so?
Like, is there a danger of reading this as a massive psychological defense mechanism?
No.
Just some elaborate form of denial to hide from the brutal final reality of death?
Well, what's fascinating here is that the text points to the exact opposite conclusion.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it is about sustaining memory through absolute, unavoidable confrontation with the loss. It's not hiding at all.
Okay, I see.
Look closely at the mechanism of creation itself. We are talking about the medium of acrylic paint. Think about the physical pain, the sheer amount of time required to mix the pigments, to build the layers.
Oh, man, right.
To stare at reference materials or search your own memories for weeks on end, trying to get your deceased sister's eyes just right.
You are staring directly into the absence every single time you pick up the brush.
Exactly. It is an agonizing, incredibly slow digestion of grief. The grueling physical effort required to paint that portrait is the ultimate proof that there is no denial happening.
Because denial is easy.
Right. Denial is quick. Denial is turning away. This is an active, painful affirmation of the value of life beyond that absence. It's forcing someone from the past to occupy a physical and emotional space in the present.
Wait, hold on. Because I'm looking at the layout described on page 402, and I have to admit, I got completely thrown off here.
The jump in the curation.
Yes. We just spent all this time establishing this profoundly intimate, heavy space for grieving lost blood relatives. But suddenly, the curation shifts. And it creates this massive, almost jarring visual juxtaposition.
It definitely surprises people.
Duke places a portrait of Srila Prabhupada, the global leader and founder of the Hare Krishna movement, right next to portraits of his everyday friends. You know, people named Valentina, Aaliyah, Daniel.
Right next to them.
And sitting right alongside them is an intimate 40-year-old portrait of his wife, Ruby.
Yep.
I mean, it feels like you are in your living room mourning your mother, and suddenly the Pope walks in to join the intimacy. How does putting a massive institutional religious figure next to your friends and your wife make any coherent sense in the same gallery?
So you were reading that clash through a very conventional hierarchical lens, which is exactly what Duke is dismantling here.
Oh, really? So I'm falling into the trap.
A little bit, yeah. The assumption is that a global spiritual leader occupies a completely different emotional and categorical universe than a college friend or a spouse.
Well, yeah, normally they do.
But there is no hierarchy here. For Duke, Prabhupada isn't a distant, untouchable theological concept or a, you know, corporate religious structure.
Mm.
He represents the author's literal spiritual family.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because if we look at it that way, the spiritual and the personal aren't separate categories at all.
They are completely intertwined.
Right.
His religious and spiritual teachings provide the literal filter through which Duke understands life. It's how he processes the death of his family members and how he interacts with the world.
So integrating his spiritual master alongside his wife and friends.
It makes perfect sense. Because they collectively formed the tribe that sustains him. The spiritual leader provides the vocabulary to understand the grief, and the family provides the grounded reality for the spiritual teachings.
They are all sitting at that same metaphorical table I mentioned earlier.
Exactly. They form the architecture of his existence.
That entirely resolves the clash for me. It's an archive of profound belonging, not a museum directory.
Well said.
And speaking of the architecture of existence, the text gives special attention to that portrait of his wife, Ruby. It explicitly mentions that it was painted in her youth 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's a really crucial detail.
There is a deeply layered act of emotional archaeology happening there. We were talking earlier about the medium of acrylic paint and the physical toll it takes.
Right, because the medium dictates the interaction.
Mm.
Acrylic paint fundamentally relies on a process of layering.
You have to build it up. You lay down a base, you let it dry, you add another layer, you adjust the tone.
Add a translucent glaze to change how the light hits it.
Exactly. And the text describing this 40-year-old portrait of Ruby made me realize how perfectly that physical painting process mirrors the reality of a four-decade-long marriage.
Oh, absolutely.
A marriage isn't a single snapshot, you know. It is layers of time, friction, compromise, and shared experience built one on top of the other.
The physical layering of the acrylic paint becomes a direct manifestation of the layering of time and affection. When he paints his wife, he isn't just capturing the surface of her face today. He is painting the foundation of who she was 40 years ago.
Right.
And acknowledging all those invisible, accumulated layers of life they have built together in the interim. The technique of the art reflects the endurance of the bond.
Because these people, the blood relatives, the chosen friends, the spiritual guides, the partner of 40 years, they form the absolute foundation of his worldview. And that fundamentally changes how we have to read the entire rest of the book.
Right. We haven't even talked about the structure of Trastio Pintura Artistica yet.
This deeply intimate, quiet gallery of faces is placed at the very end of the book on page 403 as the grand finale in a chapter poetically titled Vestiges of Identity.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we must acknowledge what preceded this quiet gallery.
Right. What came before?
The text notes that the earlier sections of the book deal with enormous, overwhelming external realities. The preceding chapters tackle broad sweeps of history, collective consciousness, massive social protests, and the sheer vastness of nature.
We are talking about heavy, chaotic, societal themes, the macro stuff. the crushing weight of existing in a complicated world.
Yeah, it's a lot to carry.
And this is where we have to dive into the title of the entire book itself, Trastio, because it is the key that unlocks this structural choice.
It really is.
In many parts of Latin America, Trastio is the term for moving. It implies relocating, uprooting your life, packing up every single thing you own, and physically hauling it to a new location.
And a trastio is never easy. It implies a heavy, laborious, chaotic transit.
Right. So think about the journey of reading this book like a massive physical move. You've spent the first seven chapters carrying these incredibly heavy boxes, a box full of complicated history, a box overflowing with politics and societal upheaval.
A heavy crate full of human consciousness and the environment.
You've been lugging the weight of the external world on your shoulders for hundreds of pages. And then you reach chapter 8, the end of the move.
You finally get to set the boxes down.
You are sitting in the quiet living room of your new house. The exhaustion of the macro world is behind you. You are unpacking the very final, most fragile box. And what's inside?
Just the faces.
It isn't a loud political manifesto or a sweeping panoramic shot of the universe to summarize the human condition. It is the faces of the people you love.
Yeah.
You end this exhausting, monumental journey by simply looking into their eyes.
And ending a book about massive global issues with a quiet living room of faces isn't just a stylistic choice. It is a profound philosophical argument about the cultural impact of art and the nature of human perception.
Oh, so?
Duke is arguing, visually and structurally, that the macro simply does not exist without the micro.
Oh, I see. You cannot understand the heavy boxes without the lenses of the people in that fragile box.
Exactly the point.
Yeah.
Your worldview, your political stances, your understanding of history, your relationship with nature. I mean, none of these things are formed in a vacuum. They are inescapably filtered through the values, the grief, the love, and the teachings given to you by your parents, your siblings, your partners, and your spiritual teachers.
They build the foundation.
Yes, they build the foundation of how you perceive the massive chaotic world outside.
So by placing them at the very end, he is revealing the source code of his entire artistic vision. He's basically telling you, everything you just saw in the first seven chapters only exists because these specific people taught me how to see.
And in doing so, the deeply personal biography transforms into universal testimony.
Yeah.
When you look at the portrait of his father, or that choral portrait of his deceased and living family members, you don't need to know their individual biographies or the specific sound of their voices to feel the monumental weight of a son's love. The specific translates universally.
So what does this all mean for you listening to this deep dive right now? Because we are operating in a daily reality that functions on the exact opposite principles of Duke's Trastio.
We really are.
Think about the visual saturation of our modern world. Think about the device sitting in your pocket right now.
Our relationship with capturing human presence has fundamentally changed.
It's totally different. If you see a beautiful sunset, or you are having a rare dinner with your extended family, the immediate instinct is to pull out your phone.
Right. Snap a picture.
You take 40 rapid-fire photos in a fraction of a second, and they instantly vanish into an ephemeral, invisible digital cloud. We have the technological capacity to document absolutely every single second of our waking lives.
But in doing so, we often pay deep attention to absolutely nothing.
Exactly. We capture the digital data of the image, but we entirely lose the presence.
This raises an important question, though. How do we actually value our memories, our essential bonds, in an era of constant, frictionless information overload?
Right.
What Duke's hand-painted archive does is forcefully restore what we can call the materiality of affection.
The materiality of affection, that captures it perfectly. Love and memory take up physical space. They require time. They have texture and weight.
And it challenges us to critically evaluate our own preservation methods. Are we allowing the people who shape our existence to just float away in a digital cloud mixed in with, you know, pictures of our lunch and screenshots of emails?
Yeah, that's bleak, but true.
Or are we actively, deliberately engaging in the grueling work of creating our own symbolic continuity? Are we giving our attention, which is our most valuable, painfully limited resource, to the people who form the architecture of our souls?
It is a stunning contrast to ponder. The agonizingly slow physical process of painting layers of acrylic versus the instant, thoughtless swipe of a screen. One demands your entire soul and confronts you with the reality of time and loss.
And the other just demands a twitch of your thumb.
The demand for the soul is precisely what makes the final chapter of this book so enduring. It is a reminder that in a world utterly obsessed with the macro, the global crises, the historical sweeps, the massive societal shifts, it is the micro, you know, the quiet faces in our personal gallery, our spiritual and chosen families that actually anchor us to reality and give the macro any meaning at all.
Couldn't have said it better.
It has been a profound journey through these three pages. We started today looking at what seemed like a simple catalog of faces. But through Duke's Trastio, we have decoded a profound exploration of raw grief, the beautiful non-hierarchical expansion of chosen and spiritual family, and the necessary process of moving the heavy boxes of our lives to finally uncover what truly matters.
It's a lot to unpack.
It is, which leaves us with a final thought for you to carry into your day. We want you to ponder the scenario on your own, building off the philosophy of Duke's work, but applying it directly to your own reality.
Okay.
Imagine for a moment that your own life is a massive, heavy book. Mm. It's filled with chaotic chapters about your career trajectory, the global crises you've navigated, your evolving opinions on the world, and your struggles to find your place in society.
A lot of heavy chapters.
Now, imagine you have finally reached your final chapter, your ultimate Trastio. You have set the heavy boxes down. If that closing chapter was dedicated exclusively to the faces that formed your worldview, the specific individuals who gave you the lenses through which you see reality, who would be sitting in that final gallery?
Yeah.
Who gets a seat in that space where time and loss are suspended? It's a powerful inventory to take. And beyond just snapping a quick, easily forgotten selfie on your phone that will inevitably get buried under thousands of other images, what medium, what level of deep, grueling attention would truly be worthy of capturing their essence?
That's the real question.
Think about that. Until our next deep dive, thank you for unpacking this with us.
Take care and keep questioning.